Okay, this is part two of the podcast for Wednesday, April 17th, 2019, Theories of Knowledge. Talking about Descartes. So Descartes says that you can do philosophy like you do math and geometry as a series of a priori deductions, start out with intuitive truths, axioms, and then like derive all the other truths of philosophy. And so this is part of his rationalist method, right? So today we're going to talk about Locke, who's an empiricist. Descartes, as a rationalist, thinks that knowledge comes through reason and that intends to favor this a priori reasoning, which means, again, like apart from sense experience. So a priori means apart from sense. Yeah, this thing's dying. Sense experience. So he thinks you can sort of do it like you do geometry, like a geometric proof. And a lot of people, the empiricists will come along and say you can't really do philosophy like that. It'd be nice if we could, but it doesn't really work that way. If you want to find out what's true, you have to use your senses. And we'll see Locke in a moment is going to say that all knowledge comes through experience, and all that reason does is sort of like puts together your experiences in some coherent whole, but what's doing the real work is your experience, and that's the main determination of knowledge. But a priori, from sense experience, the empiricist is going to say, no, it's a posteriori knowledge, it's knowledge from the senses that should be the real determinants of our knowledge. So to illustrate his rationalism, again, he has two examples. The piece of wax and the men in hats and coats. So one thing that he talks about, I'm going to just go over stuff and maybe have a little less discussion today just because I want to make sure we cover Locke. So he says you take a piece of wax and you take it at room temperature, and it's kind of like putty in your hands. It doesn't have much of a smell to it. It's sort of like a white in color. But then if you heat it up, its properties change. It goes from being like a sort of putty-like solid to a liquid. It has like a scent to it. It's hot to the touch. So it's got totally, and it's transparent. It's not white anymore. It's transparent. It even talks about, like, it makes a sound. Like, if you have, like, the wax in your hand at room temperature, you kind of flick it with your finger, and it makes a kind of thwacking sound. You do that with the wax, it splatters all over you, and hot wax all over you, right? So it doesn't make the same sound. So all of its sensory properties are different. So the question is, how do you know it's the same piece of wax, even though it's got totally different properties? Well, he would say that you understand that wax is a substance that can undergo changes through time, that it's the same substance and it can have different properties under different conditions. Now, if it was just your senses, you wouldn't be able to know that. It's your mind puts together these series of sensations, and you have this concept of a substance that can undergo change through time and take on different properties and remain the same substance. That's all up here. That's not seeing shapes and colors and hearing sounds. That's your mind at work organizing the contents of your experience. So he says this shows you that your knowledge, like even scientific knowledge, doesn't come from the senses. It comes from reason. It comes from conceptual knowledge or a priori knowledge. Same thing with the men in hats and coats. So he talks about you're like up on a balcony, you're looking down the street, and you see people scurrying along in their hats and cloaks. And you know, what does it look like? Well, maybe like, you know, guys walking along the street there, and maybe see, there's like these black blobs. I mean, these guys are running because they're late to appointment. Here's some guy that's just kind of walking around slow. Maybe he's got a little walking cane or something like that. That's what you see. But how do you know? First of all, how do you know they're not like tiny little men, like ants? Right? They look like ants. But you have this idea of perspective, that small or large objects or medium-sized objects look different when they're far away. They appear to be smaller. That's all in your mind. Like in your visual field, there are these tiny little blips. But you don't think in reality they're tiny little blips. You think, okay, were I be down in the street, I'd see probably a beard. I'd see something like this. Like this guy walking along. He's got his cloak. A walking stick, right? He's like walking along. And he asked the question, like, how do I know it's a dude there walking along? How do I know it's not like a robot? And so he thinks about, like, what if it's, draw a little robot. It looks like Bender or something. How do I know it's not like a robot underneath the, with maybe some wheels, right? I know it's not like a robot underneath that cloak. At the time, they had these kind of like rich kids' toys, which were like wind-up automatons, and they'd like move around, and their mouths would go up and down, and their eyes would go back and forth. And so they had this concept of like they have clockwork mechanisms and, mechanical wind-up toys. And so why can it be like a giant robot? Automaton is the word. Automaton, robot. How do you know it's not a robot underneath the cloaks?
Your deductive reasoning?
Yeah, he would say, like, your mind puts together all your past background experiences. Like, you've been down at the street, and you've seen people walking along, and then you go upstairs, and you look down, and your mind says, that's what a guy walking down on the street looks like from a strange angle, from a height. Looking down, that's what, and were I to go down there, I would see just a guy walking like that. And I've had this experience, and I put together my past experience with my present experience and interpret it. That's all mental stuff going on. That's your mind conceptualizing. All your senses show you is a bunch of shapes and colors, right? They don't show you reality. Your mind has to construct reality based on the scant information from the senses. And this is this kind of goes along with this idea of, like, in science. Modern science. There's this theory, it's sort of a higher level concept in philosophy of science called the underdetermination of theory. By data is a long name for it. The idea is that the underdetermination of theory by data. And in science, what makes a given theory true is not just the data itself, but there are all these theoretical considerations, like whether the theory has simplicity, whether it's elegant, whether it's consistent with other theories. The experimental verification of theories usually lags way behind in fields like physics, which is based on how certain equations turn out, right? So it's also physics and even modern linguistics is also seems to validate Descartes, where it seems that a lot of these sort of physics is heavily mathematical. And again, like I was at UC Santa Barbara, and we had the theoretical physics institute. And what do people do? Well, they sit in a room with a pencil and paper trying to crunch equations and think about things. They're not out there looking in radio telescopes because it's the theoretical physics institute. Now, they're looking at data, but they're looking at the data and they're looking at experiments, and then they're trying to do all this number crunching, essentially. That's what Stephen Hawking would do. Think about concepts and think about how things could be, and then trying to work out certain equations. So it's not gathering sensory data. It's highly theoretical. And this would fit in with Descartes' model of knowledge coming from reason and the senses playing a secondary role. Same thing with linguistics, where it looks like a lot of there's a universal grammar that's present in the human brain that's innate. and that Descartes would love this sort of idea of innate ideas. So let's see other stuff about Descartes. Okay, I think that's all I'm going to do on Descartes. Any final questions on Descartes? I want to make sure we give adequate play to Locke. Well, let's start out with Locke. Locke's an empiricist. He's also like one of the most influential philosophers in the Founding Fathers, classical liberal in the tradition of Adam Smith and David Hume, also influential philosopher, although not so much in political philosophy. John Stuart Mill. There's a philosopher named Montague Montesquieu had a lot of influence on the Founding Fathers. But after Montesquieu, I think Locke, his treatise on government is super influential. Anyway, he's also well known as an empiricist philosopher. And so empiricists think knowledge comes from the senses. So the five senses are super important. And he starts out talking about how does the cabinet of the mind come to be furnished. So if you think about your mind as like a cabinet where you keep stuff, how does the stuff get in there? And he says one word, from experience. So he says all of our knowledge comes from experience. Even like the most abstract of concepts is learned through experience. So a big part of his argument is against innate ideas. So what's an innate idea? Yeah, it's an idea you're born with, right? It's innate to you. So Descartes would say things like the rules of mathematics and logic and even your belief in God, your belief in morality. Like, you know, people say things like, well, everyone has an inherent sense of right and wrong. Everyone is born with a conscience, right? So that's sort of this idea of innateness So Descartes would say things like logic, math, morality, God, that all these ideas are innate, and learning is the sort of stimulating these ideas and getting them to come out, get bringing out what's already there, like watering a seed and getting it to grow into the thing that it is. Locke says that's totally wrong. So what are some of his arguments against innate ideas? Does everyone have innate ideas? That's a good question. Who has them, who doesn't have them?
Children and people with mental
disabilities. I know it's hard to know what the politically correct thing, yeah, challenges, whatever. So you get a person with like a really low IQ that has a cognitive disability. So and you say, you know, or like a really small child. And you say, hey, Johnny, I got a question for you. And yeah, tis impossible for a thing to both be and not be. True or false? And like, can I go out and play? Right? It's like he'd have no clue. You show him the quadratic equation, he'd be like, those are some funny letters. Right? He had no idea. You try teaching him algebra, and it's like, good luck.
Well, I was trying to teach my daughter just like simple addition, like what's 2 plus 2, and she's like, 5. So I would believe it was an 8, but when I showed it to her with senses, she was able to grasp it.
Yeah.
And then as the concepts, it was, you know, kind of opened it up to, by using her senses.
Yeah, and he would say, Locke would say, as your mind develops and as you get more and more experiences, your brain is able to sort of put them together. And so he'd say, like, and this is through that, this empiricists love this this idea of abstraction. So he would say all these concepts come from experience. but through this process of abstraction. And abstraction is when you like you focus on some qualities and ignore the others. So you like if you think about the concept of a triangle, you ignore all like the different kinds of triangles there might be, and you see, what do these things have in common? Well, it's they all have three sides, and you ignore the fact that you have some of those lines aren't straighter than the others, and so on and so forth. So you get this sort of idealized concept of a triangle. Now, there never has been a true triangle, right? It's like as an existing thing, because any line you're going to draw is going to have a non-uniform width. The abstract concept of a triangle is like of, you know, two points, like are an infinite number of points, you know, that form a line. Even the concept of a line, right, is it's an abstraction in geometry. There's never been a perfect line that's ever been drawn, because it would have to have, like, I don't know what it would be, like the point, what's the width of a point. The point, and the line's never going to be uniform. It's never going to be exactly straight. The molecules, you know, and you could have, I suppose if with nanotech, maybe you could line up a bunch of atoms along along something using fancy, the magnetic fields or something. But you think about like drawing on a whiteboard, you can't draw a straight line. But we have this idealized concept of a plane, of lines, of figures, and so on. And they're these abstract concepts. Even think about the concept of like a figure, right? It's like a figure drawn on a plane. Like these are all different figures. Like, here's the toolbox I made when I was in seventh grade. It's supposed to be rectangular and turned out to be, it's a parallelogram, it's close. Right, so these definitely aren't right angles, but it was close. This little thing. These are all concepts of like geometric figures. That's an even more abstract concept, right? So there's a figure. There's the idea of a triangle, and then there's maybe the idea of like what's this be? This would be like a polygon, right? It's a multi-sided figure. This is also a polygon, but it's specifically a triangle. This is a parallelogram. I spell that right. Which means it has two sides that are parallel, but the other sides are wonky. They don't have to be parallel. So we have all these abstract concepts that we get from having various kinds of sensations. So he'd say, you get this idea of like sort of this idea of what did he start with? A cherry is not a rod, which is a stick, right? So you think about the difference between like if you have a cherry tree, there's the branch and then there's the fruit. And you see that the branch is different from the fruit. And then you come up with this concept of difference. Or inequality. And then maybe the more abstract thing, you get sort of this idea of the principle of non-contradiction. Unless you take a bunch of drugs or medicate or something, you understand that a contradiction can't be true. But Locke would say it's not an a priori belief, that it's something that you learn through experience. You have all these sensations, you notice the difference between different sensations, you notice that there are objects that have different properties, and later on you get these concepts maybe here of sort of like this sort of the object quality. And then the most abstract sort of ideas of truth and falsity and so on. But it's all built up through having these sensations from the five senses. And then it's built up into our corpus of knowledge. So let's take a brief break, and we'll 5 minutes, and we'll talk about Locke's classification of ideas and his concept of substance, and that will do it for material for the first midterm.